When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent, match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
Good to see you.
Can you comment on the drones that are flying around New Jersey ports? It seems like the American people have a big disconnect.
The government knows what is happening. Look, our military knows where they took off from. If it's a garage, they can go right into that garage. They know where it came from and where it went. And for some reason, they don't want to comment. And I think they'd be better off saying what it is. Our military knows and our president knows. And for some reason, they want to keep people in suspense. I can't imagine it's the enemy, because if it was the enemy, they'd blast it out. Even if they were late, they'd blast it. Something strange is going on. For some reason, they don't want to tell the people. And they should, because the people are really, I mean, they happen to be over Bedminster. They're very close to Bedminster. I think maybe I won't spend the weekend in Bedminster. I've decided to cancel my trip.
Have you received an intelligence briefing on the drones?
I don't want to comment on that.
So Trump's speaking today from Palm Beach, and he got asked a question about the drones. And when you are the president of the United States and people across the country are seeing unidentified flying objects, which are called UFOs, but that's not what we call them anymore. UAPs.
UAPs.
Which are
unidentified
aerial phenomena.
Antifa.
Problems.
Right.
Obviously. I mean, it could be.
I mean,
we don't know.
That's why we're here, is to deliver the facts.
People have questions about what's going on, obviously. And when you hear John Kirby go out, I think Brad said this last week, like, they send John Kirby out when they really need to not F up the message. Yes. They want you. That's probably not how Brad said it, but that, I mean, when.
No, that's not how Brad said it.
He definitely thought that, though.
People want to know, and here you have Donald Trump. He gave an hour and 15 minute press conference. He spent an hour and 15 minutes after initially announcing, you know, something that is a very good positive story, something that is going to make a lot of people feel just like, okay, this is headed definitely in the right direction. An investment in America's future with SoftBank.
This historic investment is a monumental demonstration of confidence in America's future, and it will help ensure that artificial intelligence, emerging technologies, and other industries of tomorrow are built, created, and grown right here in the USA. One of the beautiful things about Masa is he's very much involved with emerging technology, probably knows it maybe better than almost anybody.
Yeah, Elon Musk's in the background going, hey. So there's a big, massive investment being made into American-centric research when it comes to the future of these types of things. And I want to play this clip from, he calls him Masayoshi. He's a CEO of SoftBank. And if you watched the actual clip, or if you got to hear the actual clip of when this was going on, Ryan, I don't know if you heard about it. So this is a huge investment, $100 billion.
Yeah.
It's double what it was the last time Trump was in office. He doubled it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes. Well, let's listen and see. Let's listen to this clip and then...
Thank you so much. I'm very, very excited. I would really like to celebrate the great victory of President Trump. And my confidence level to the economy of the United States has tremendously increased with his victory. So because of that, I'm now excited to commit this $100 billion and 100,000 jobs into the United States.
So that's why I wanted to play the clip to be sure if it were in there or not, because it's not. The funniest thing at the beginning of this whole press conference, you have Trump speaking to the press, and Masayoshi is going to speak. So Trump's going to introduce him to come up and talk about this great investment, this great partnership. And as Trump is just gushing over Masayoshi and the great success that his administration, he's doing the Trump thing. He's giving himself the pat on the back, really, that he honestly deserves. He goes, $100 billion. He goes, that's amazing. Twice what it was before. He goes, and I'm going to bring him up here. He's a wonderful guy. And he says, but I'm going to ask him right now, make it 200.
Nice.
Yeah, I hope we can get the clips from
Power
that.
Power the press.
Because then it continues on, and Masayoshi's up there, and he's like kind of nervous laughing, like, I mean, it's going to be great. We'll see what we can do.
That's great.
And Trump is just like, yeah, you will. It's such a different ball game. And then after that, you have Donald Trump standing in front of the press, and he's taking question after question after question. There was a hunger from the press at this press conference that we haven't seen in quite some time, which was super refreshing. They wanted answers, and they were asking questions in a way that showed that they believed that they were going to get them. When you have Donald Trump speaking with the confidence of Donald Trump, and I will add to this, I heard some other people commenting somewhat likewise. This is a little bit more of a refined Donald Trump. There's another point later on where he's talking about, they ask him about the defamation suit. George Stephanopoulos and ABC, CBS?
ABC.
ABC have to pay Trump $15 million for accusing Donald Trump of being liable for rape, which is not true. That's a lie. When George Stephanopoulos said that repeatedly in an interview with Congresswoman Nancy Mace and wasn't checked on it, the old world that we lived in was, it just was out there.
Yep.
And George Stephanopoulos could just do those things. And he didn't have to toe the line and make sure that he was factually accurate when he's making bold statements like that, that really do defame someone. Do you know how hard it is to successfully win a libel case as a public figure?
Yeah, it's tough.
It's super tough. Like, you have to cross the line in a blaze of glory so confidently with great damage that is ensued to a public figure in order to be held liable for that.
Yeah, and show malice. You know, you have to show that the intent was not just accidental, that they were doing it on purpose. And so this lawsuit actually is a pretty big deal that he won it or settled it.
Brad's dug this up, so we're going to play this. This is great. So you've got Masayoshi standing there, and I was listening to the majority of this. I had it up on my phone, but Masayoshi is about as tall as Trump's shoulders.
Yeah.
So Trump's standing behind him and looking at a 45-degree angle to Masayoshi, who's speaking.
I'm excited to go, and we were discussing, and President Trump said, Masa, you know, double that is not enough. Maybe, you know, go for more, right?
So I'm going to ask him right now, would you make it $200 million?
Off mic.
He can actually, believe it or not, he can actually afford to do that. Would you do that?
Well, my promise is 100, but, you know, he's now asking to do more. I think, you know, with your leadership, my partnership with you, with your support, I will try to make it happen.
I will try to make it happen.
200 million investment.
He is a great negotiator.
And then Trump grabs him by the neck. He's like, come here, little man. Gives him a little noogie. The last part of that's not true, but it almost could have been.
Oh, it's. I could have. If that clip kept playing, that noogie was next.
Joe Biden is still the president of the United States. I mean, just. Gosh, this phrase, I'm like, am I getting tired of this? I'm like, no, I'm not getting tired of this. But the whole we are so back thing.
Yeah.
It's just, this is familiar. But this is familiar without the baggage. This is what Outnumbered was talking about. Kayleigh McEnany specifically was talking about just a little bit more of a refined presentation from Donald Trump, and we'll see if we can find this. I don't know if anybody pulled this or not because it was a deep cut, but he's talking about the defamation stuff, which is what we were talking about with George Stephanopoulos. $15 million?
15, yep. Yeah.
$15 million, of which I heard today that Stephanopoulos has to pay a mill of his own.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I think a million of that is coming out of Stephanopoulos' own money.
Okay.
Good. Make him pay it all. I want Trump to go on some show like E. Jean Carroll did after she won her money and talk about all the things he's going to buy. Maybe he should buy MSNBC with it. Wouldn't that be funny?
Well, have you heard what he's going to buy with it?
No.
They're putting it toward the Trump library.
Oh, okay. Have a special fake news section and call it Stephanopoulosville or something like that.
I think they actually made ABC/Stephanopoulos make the checkout to the Trump library.
No, is that for real?
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't hear that. He was asked by the press, who is just like gunning for any question they can get in there. And he just, there's no animosity. He's just going from one person to the next. And someone says, are you looking to sue anybody else? And he's like, well, yeah, I am. I'm in the middle of doing that. And we're going to drop a lawsuit here pretty soon. He says he's going to sue Iowa Des Moines Register poll lady who tried to, in his mind, defraud the voters, not really specifically of Iowa, but of the whole country, into thinking that Kamala Harris had a chance to do anything she could at the end of the campaign to push votes in the direction of Kamala Harris. Because a lot of people say, don't set expectations too high, don't set them too low, because you're worried people will be like, well, it's baked in the cake, we're not going to show up and vote. If Kamala Harris was given that last minute, hey, I know it doesn't look good here, but she's looking pretty good in Iowa. And if she's looking pretty good in Iowa, we better show up. If this pollster just, what was her name? I can't remember.
Ann Selzer.
That's right. If she just pulled this out of thin air to try to sway the results of the election, which is really on the face what I think all polls are. She just did it with a little more gusto. If she did that, is that fraud? I think it's an interesting question. Because it feels like fraud to me.
Yeah, that'll be a tough lawsuit, but there is a case to be made for sure. Because that was the case will have to show that the intent was to manipulate the media, because that's what happened. That whole weekend before the election, it was all, that whole Sunday and Monday, it was all about, oh my gosh, she's got a chance in Iowa? That means she's got a chance everywhere. That was the whole point.
Yeah, if she could possibly win Iowa, are you serious? She, like, that's actually in the realm of possibility? Well, that changes everything. And then we go when we find out, no, it changes nothing, and he kicked butt in Iowa. Here's from today's press conference.
I'm going to be bringing one against the people in Iowa, their newspaper, which had a very, very good pollster who got me right all the time. And then just before the election, she said I was going to lose by 3 or 4 points, and it became the biggest story all over the world because I was going to win Iowa by 20 points. The farmers love me, and I love the farmers. And it was interesting the way she did it. She brought it down 2 weeks before. She said I was going to only win by 4. That was a big story. But that was good because she brought it down from like 22 points to 4 or whatever the number was. Way up. Way up. An easy win. Never even thought to go there. I respect them. I love them. And they understand there's no reason to go there because she brought it from way up, walk away, which it was. And it turned out to be in the election, too, by the way. It was a win by many, many points. And then she brought it down very smartly to 4 a couple of weeks before. And everyone said, wow, that's amazing. He's only up by 4 points. Then she brought it down to where I was down by 3 or 4, whatever number she used. And that was the Des Moines Register. And it was their parent.
And in my opinion, it was fraud and it was election interference. You know, she's gotten me right always. She's a very good pollster. She knows what she was doing. And she then quit before. And we'll probably be filing a major lawsuit against them today or tomorrow. We're filing one on 60 Minutes, you know about that, where they took Kamala's answer, which was a crazy answer, a horrible answer, and they took the whole answer out and they replaced it with something else she said later on.
So when you're looking at the future possibilities of what Donald Trump might do with lawsuits, some people might think, Trump, you won. And let us not forget, let us not make this a footnote, that in the midst of all of this baloney sausage reporting that took place over the course of the campaign and everything leading up to it, Donald Trump still overwhelmingly won the Electoral College and he won the popular vote. Imagine if Donald Trump had been treated fairly this entire time, if people would have reported on him without all of the media hoaxes that were involved. Imagine that he got a fair shake this whole time. It changes everything. Like, yeah. I don't think Kamala Harris is running. I think Joe Biden drops out way earlier. Honestly, Donald Trump is probably president in 2020, and we don't have him now with the mandate and the support of some of the most unusual places.
The lawsuits that he's bringing now are basically against malpractice across multiple industries, not just media, because if you're talking about polling, he's going to try to prove that this pollster knowingly falsified their own record for the public. And that is a great case to bring because that's happening a lot these days. We all know it's happening, but this one is the most egregious. So to grab it and say, make it an example, that's a good place to start.
Yeah, and it has to stop. People have to be held accountable. We're going to break because Will Chamberlain is going to be with us when we come back. He's a senior counsel at the Article 3 Project. We're going to talk to him, which is a story that's not getting as much hype as it needs to right now, but I think a lot of this will really resonate after Donald Trump is sworn back into office, which is just amazing to me to even say out loud still to this point. 35 days to Inauguration Day. We're going to talk about those confidential human sources that were identified at January 6th. What is the magnitude of this? And also, we've heard that Donald Trump is considering possibly an executive. Is it an executive order for voter ID? National voter ID?
It was either an executive order or a law. The tweet you sent me was a law, he was saying in the tweet.
So that it would be, I suppose, different if Congress were able to get behind it. And now is the time to do it. What kind of, because the states are supposed to regulate elections. Each state is supposed to be in control of their own elections. Can there be a national requirement for voter ID to vote? Boy, would that be a game changer, certainly in the future. Before we get to a break with Will Chamberlain coming back, I do want to report on a development, and I hate to have to say this again. Fox News is saying police in Madison, Wisconsin say they are responding to a shooting incident at a local Christian school Monday, saying they have reports of multiple injuries. Quote, the Madison Police Department is investigating a shooting at Abundant Life Christian School. Multiple injuries have been reported. This remains an active and ongoing investigation. More information will be released as it is available. We currently need people to avoid the area. We will update you with the details of this breaking news as it happens. Keep it right here. We'll speak with Will Chamberlain next.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
Hey friends, I'm Sharon McMahon, host of Here's Where It Gets Interesting. Each week, I speak with authors, experts, and thought leaders on everything from American history and democracy to how to be a better person on the internet. And don't miss my extremely popular docuseries, which educate you on things you never learned in history class. Follow and listen to Here's Where It Gets Interesting on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
According to this new report, there were no undercover FBI agents. However, there were three confidential human sources tasked by the Bureau to be in the crowd on January 6th to specifically watch what the report states is concerns over domestic terrorism. Out of those three, Sandra and John, one entered the Capitol, two others entered a restricted area. The report says the FBI did not encourage or authorize any sources to go into the building or a restricted area. In addition to the three confidential human sources, the FBI told there were 23 that were there on their own. Now, they had worked with the FBI in the past on other cases, but not specifically on the January 6th rally.
Well, that's a David Spunt Fox News report. And I found it kind of interesting here over the weekend, the story of the Stephen A. Smith Show, which he's interesting. It's always interesting how he weaves his way into what we're talking about on any given day. Stephen A. Smith said, the big issue is I'm really, really sick and tired of every time I turn around, I'm finding something else that the Democrats have lied about or downplayed or misrepresented along the way. I think it's important that with the report that has been given, that we do get down to some facts of the matter, which is why we bring our friend Will Chamberlain back on the show with us. Senior counsel at the Article 3 Project on X at Will Chamberlain. You can go to article3project.org for more information. Will, thank you for being here today. It's great to have you back.
Obviously, great to be with you, Annie.
Thank you, Will. Give me your assessment of that report. When you found out that the confidential human sources were participating in January 6th, what does that mean to you, and what do you want the American people to understand about what this report revealed?
I mean, I think it, I'm not surprised by it at all. Hold on, let me get my audio a little bit better here. I apologize.
That's okay.
I think I'm okay.
Yeah, you're fine. Good.
So, yeah, I think... it's not a surprise. It reflects a very obvious thing that was happening, because obviously the FBI is going to have sources within the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers and people like that, you know, people who are members of those organizations, but talk to the FBI and confidentially and give them information. So it's not surprising at all. And the real thing that I think is the scandal is the way in which Americans were gaslit and told that it's ridiculous to think that there are federal sources among the people who are going into the Capitol. Like, I mean, Liz Cheney mocked Mike Lee, called him a conspiracy theorist for suggesting what was pretty obviously true at the time and what now has been proven to be true. Now, I don't think it goes so far as to prove like FBI orchestration of what happened on January 6th or like a deep FBI involvement in initiating the riot. But I just think it reveals that the Democrats think Americans are so stupid that they're just willing to flat out lie to them about the presence of FBI confidential human sources on that day, only for it to be revealed 6 months later or a year later, like we all knew it would eventually be. It's really contemptible behavior from those people.
Yeah, you know, and Will, the thing that I always have to question myself is, you know, why would they not at least allude to the fact that what we all understand, good grief, you kind of hope it's true that the FBI has people placed in these areas, that, you know, around the world or whatever, domestically, that are at least our intelligence agencies know what's going on so they can protect us. And then when they're so aggressive about pushing back against, especially the way you said Liz Cheney did, it seems to me that the confusion and the absence of information becomes the political capital that they try to thrive on and have been successful with over the course of maybe even over a decade in this country, that it's more of the misinformation and disinformation that they seem to hate so much that they actually profit the most from.
Exactly. And it's exactly why we need somebody like Kash Patel to clean up all the rot at the FBI. We have an agency that and people associated with it that just don't feel any problem about lying to the American public about what they're doing, about, you know, they criticize mis and disinformation all the time, and yet they're a major source of it. They produce it for the American public, and then go out and accuse other people of being crazy conspiracy theorists. Like, I think, you know, it's just another example of a reason that we should be really tired of the way the FBI has been conducting business lately. Like, I don't think most Americans would think we do need some sort of federal law enforcement. There's obvious important cases for it to be used. But they're just, they've grown because maybe of their location in D.C., because of their involvement in all this anti-Trump work, that, you know, all the crossfire hurricane and everything involved in destabilizing the Trump administration, that This is what they wanted. They're too involved in this, and they need to go back to their original function.
We're speaking with Will Chamberlain. He is a senior counsel at the Article 3 Project on X at Will Chamberlain. Go to article3project.org to learn more. You're talking about, you know, the appropriate uses of the FBI. And I think politically in a campaign year and everything, it's really easy to be like, this good, that bad, this good, that bad. And, you know, when My understanding, I've heard people say they want to eliminate the Department of Education. I haven't really heard Kash Patel say he wants to eliminate the FBI. Give me some examples of the past ways that the FBI has handled a situation where a functioning FBI would have handled it differently.
I mean, I think you just look, it's more about what it would be focused on and where its agents would be working. I mean, you think about what are the origins of the FBI. A big one would have been bank robbery. We forget that sort of at the turn of the 20th century and in the 1920s and 1930s, you had lots of problems with bank robbery in Midwestern states. And it was very easy to, you know, rob a bank in one state and quickly cross the border. And once you're across the border, the cops investigating the bank robbery don't have jurisdiction to go and investigate you where you are. And so interstate crimes that evolve that are cross border, crimes on tribal lands, crimes, you know, having this component where there's obviously a federal role, that's what the FBI should be doing. They're important, and they're, you know, essentially preventing people from exploiting weaker localities. Civil rights is a good example of them. Like, yeah, if there's a state violating civil rights, violating the Constitution, then and the state law enforcement is itself corrupt, then you want federal law enforcement to be there as a backstop. So that's the world in which we want the FBI. But really what they've done is, in addition to this federal law enforcement role, they've taken on post 9/11 the role of being the domestic counterintelligence organization as well. And that's not normal in most countries. For example, Israel is a good example of this, where Israel has law enforcement and then they have domestic counterintelligence, and they're not the same organization, right? Those are doing two different, very different functions, and they should be, you know, they don't need to be the same piece. And so it's like, to the extent we need domestic counterintelligence, which we probably need some function of it, but it doesn't need to be tied to federal law enforcement. It can be its own agency, kind of more along the lines of what the NSA is doing.
Yeah.
And because when you tie it together with all the arresting, like, the NSA can't go around and arrest people. That's the reason it's important to keep those things separate. But the FBI can both investigate, you know, American citizens and spy on them and then arrest them too.
Yes.
So you want to keep those functions separate.
Will, I'm going to let you meet my coworker here, Ryan Wiggins. He wants to ask you a question.
Hey, Will, I've read a lot about Kash Patel and Washington insiders saying things that actually scare me a little bit, because what they're saying is, this is such a big organization, big agency, the FBI. It's going to take Kash Patel or any head of the FBI a year or two really to even get their bearings, let alone to start changing things. Are you concerned that it's going to take that long for Kash Patel to really come in and start to change the way it operates?
Possibly, but he has a lot of power as the director of the FBI over the FBI rank and file and the senior staff, and can very quickly replace them, because he may not be able to fire them outright, but he can reassign them wherever he wants to go. That was something, you know, Hoover was notorious for reassigning agents to Butte, Montana, and only stopped when he realized that Butte was actually a very beautiful place. That's going to be in his thing. Like, do you want to go to the FBI field office in Fairbanks, Alaska, or the middle of Arizona in summer? Or do you want to retire, Mr. Deputy Chief of Staff, who's been in D.C. his whole career? Mm-hmm. Like, you have the ability to force people out as the director, essentially by reassigning them to places they don't want to go. And if he's able to clear out the seventh floor of the FBI, the senior staff, and get his own people in there, or people who are simpatico with him in there, I think he can make a lot of change. And I think he can do it a little more quickly than people are anticipating.
Well, I would assume that the people who are given that opportunity to go to the desert in the summer or retire, they're going to still receive some very nice retirement packages from the taxpayer, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, and I think this is something that it's important. This is a good meta point for conservatives and Trump supporters to understand. Retire, effectively getting what we want out of the bureaucracy is going to involve paying off bureaucrats. And that's okay. It's a one-time thing, or it's already a sunk cost in the sense of we already owe these people a pension. So we shouldn't get too upset about, you know, paying these people severance. Like, and in fact, the better, the more comfortable we are with paying more people severance, the more people we can get out of the government that shouldn't be there, and the more of our people we can get in. So I think that's a good, you know, a mindset of like, we shouldn't be penny pinching here. This is a very good and valuable use of the taxpayers' money, is to get these people out of their positions.
Last question before we let you go. We're speaking with Will Chamberlain of the Article 3 Project. I've heard discussion being had right now about a potential law. I don't know if it's through executive order, that the Trump administration could come in and institute some sort of national voter ID law. What are the legal navigations that the administration would need to maneuver in order to make something like that possible?
Well, I was just reading about this. Article 1, Section 4 of the Constitution gives Congress the authority to regulate the time, place, and manner of elections for federal office. So, I mean, if they were trying to regulate a mayoral election, I don't think they'd be able to get away with that. But as long as we're talking about congressional elections, and I think presidential elections as well, but certainly congressional elections, Congress has authority to regulate in this area. So if Congress passed a national voter ID law, that would pass constitutional muster.
And if something like that would require a majority in the House, simple majority in the Senate, is that?
I mean, it would have, under current Senate rules, it would need to get passed a filibuster, because it's not really a financial regulation.
Sure. Like
basically, I think the way around the filibuster is reconciliation, which is sort of only usable on budget matters and spending matters.
Okay. Well, you're saying there's a chance.
There's a chance, yeah, sure.
Well, thank you for your time today. We're really grateful for it. A lot of really important information, and we appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Happy to do it.
Yep.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. Will Chamberlain of the Article 3 Project, a senior counsel there. You can find him on X at Will Chamberlain. Go tell him hello, and thanks for coming on the Annie Fry Show. And we'll put up some of the clips from this later on today. Really interesting stuff. It's interesting to hear Will talk about the benefit and the value of the FBI. We're old enough as elder millennials in this room to remember when, like, the FBI and the police were the good guys.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember being a kid and thinking, wow, the ATF? That's really cool. You know, all these agencies, they have this kind of mystique about them that still exists in some ways.
You remember when President Biden was giving a speech from the Rose Garden? He was talking about something that had to do with gun regulation. He was talking about how he's really going to take it to the ATF, but he said AFT, which is the American Federation for Teachers, Teachers Union. It's like, it's not the same person. So, all right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get to Wiggins America, all the stories that we did not get to this weekend, or maybe things you might have missed. Ryan likes to give us the update on these incredibly important stories. I mean, they're just... like, you can't go through your day without knowing them.
You miss these, but they're going to change your life kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like gummy bears and, you know, chopping up malls and stuff.
We said that we would update you throughout the course of the show on the tragic events in Wisconsin right now. And the latest report right now is that there are, I believe, 4 people who have died in a school shooting in Madison, Wisconsin. They believe that the suspected shooter was a student. I believe the shooter is also dead. We'll update you with news on this as it develops. We'll be right back.
Sunshine and ravioli. Macaroni.
So I want to update you before we get to Wiggins America on the events in Madison, Wisconsin right now. The headline from Fox News says school shooting leaves 4 dead, 5 injured, juvenile suspect dead. Police in Madison, Wisconsin say they are responding to a shooting incident at a local Christian school on Monday, saying they have reports of multiple injuries. Police say they responded to reports of an active shooter at the Abundant Life Christian School at roughly 10:57 a.m. They identified a juvenile deceased at the scene who they believe was responsible for the shooting. They are encouraging local residents to avoid the area. Madison Police Chief Sean Barnes said at least four people, in addition to the shooter, were killed. And five people have been transferred to a nearby hospital with injuries. Barnes did not clarify whether the deceased individuals were students or teachers. Lord have mercy. I want to give you those updates as they continue to come and make sure that we don't skip over that while we're doing the rest of the show. So if more develops, we will have it for you. All right. You ready to do Wiggins America now?
I'm ready.
All right. Let's get there.
Wiggins. Oh! Monday Roundup. This here's the wildest ride in the wilderness.
All right, let's start with the strangest one that I have of the weekend. There is a girl who pretended, this is a human interest story, but it's very fascinating. Girl who pretended to be her own twin every holiday for years, finally told her grandma on her deathbed that the twin had died 5 years ago. She had
Wait. She pretended to be her own twin.
Yes.
But she actually had a twin.
She actually had a twin. She had a twin sister, identical twin.
I thought you were just saying that she just pretended to be a twin.
No, she didn't make up a person. This was a real person. It was her own twin. The twin died of something like meningitis about 5 years before the fact.
Was the family aware that she was faking this for grandma?
Apparently, dad, I don't know about mom, dad encouraged it. Because they thought, gosh, grandma is so old. If she has a problem with this, it could be the end of her. Well, then she lived for another 5 years. So they faked it over and over and over. At every holiday gathering, she would come in as her own sister and then leave and come back as herself at holiday gatherings.
Why even at that point tell her on her deathbed? Like, is there a point really? By the way,
I'm with Ethan.
She died 5 years ago.
You guys got exactly where I was going with this. Why even tell her at all if she's on her deathbed?
Yeah.
This is beyond white lie.
Oh, yeah. A little bit. This is a crazy... It's amazing that somebody could pull this off, because we're talking about stuff that's like right out of the movies the last couple of weeks. This is out of The Parent Trap. I mean, this is basically the plot of the movie, other than the fact that one of them didn't die. But pretending to be your own twin is a remarkable. Now, it's not that that's never happened. I think that I know people in my life that have tried to play themselves off as the opposite before. If you're an identical twin,
how much does your wife and her twin look like?
Enough.
Do you guys
when
hear
they were
fizz.
Do you fizz?
Hear, I hear like a soda fizzing.
Well, let me see.
I don't know.
Okay, it's there.
You do, okay.
But it's deeper than. Okay. I don't think it's coming over there.
I don't hear anything.
Have they ever done the switcheroo? Or they look alike enough to do that?
I think when they were kids, they looked enough alike that they tried to go to the opposite class once just to see if they could get by with it. But the older they got, the less they looked alike, so they couldn't do it. But I think every identical twin has probably entertained the idea of doing this in some way or another. Right?
My husband's a twin, but they never looked alike enough to do that.
Yeah.
I do. You know what? I'm not going to name names, of course, but I do know twins, and they may not be identical, but they're the people who are like, if they're not identical, you're like, how are you not identical?
Mm-hmm.
They look exactly alike. But during COVID, they had a parent in the hospital, and you could only have, you remember how you had to have like one named visitor?
This is great.
Yes. You could only have a designated visitor. When my grandma, she died in 2020, she had a heart attack and put her in the hospital,
mm-hmm.
but there was no COVID involved. Nobody had COVID, but the only person who could be in the hospital with her ended up being my mom, because she was the closest one to get there. She was the first one who could get, actually, she took her to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
But since my mom was the one who showed up with her, nobody else could go in with her, which is absurd.
Yeah, it's insane.
The twins that I know had somebody in the hospital like that, and they looked enough alike that they went and bought new outfits so they could match, and they
that's awesome.
Took turns going in and out and just pretended they
And this was during COVID.
Yes.
That's great.
And I was like, good for you.
I feel like your situation is like worst nightmare, though, of like being married to someone who has a twin. And like, I mean, like, I feel like it has to be worst nightmare situation of like not recognizing which one is which, and all of a sudden going up to your sister-in-law and thinking that that's your wife.
Like giving her a peck on the cheek. No, that's not going to happen, Ethan. They don't look that much alike anyway.
I'm saying a situation where you were married to a twin in general, an identical twin. So not necessarily your situation.
You ever see twins that marry twins?
Mm-hmm.
Then they have like identical children?
Yeah. And the kids, there's like some name for those kids. I can't remember it because they're genetically almost twins, but they're not twins. They're not.
Yeah.
They're cousins, aren't they? Yeah, it's crazy. Those are really interesting stories. All right, moving on. There we go. Just whip your ears off.
That was terrible.
It's so loud. All right, it's probably compressed over the air, but in our ears,
well,
yikes.
I turned my headphones way up. it's my fault.
Next one is a little more fun. Gen Z is shopping more at malls.
Hooray!
Than online. Isn't that great? Gen Z consumers, despite growing up as digital natives, shop in stores about as much as their baby boomer grandparents do, according to a new survey by the ISCS, a mall industry group. The reason is probably what you'd expect. The generation that is coming up is seeking social connection instead of just being online all the time, and also instant gratification, which I have to appreciate as well because you get it right away.
Is Gen Z mine? Is that me?
Yeah.
Okay. We know this.
Do you like to go to the mall?
No.
Do you shop everything online?
Pretty much.
Which Stranger Things season is the mall? Three?
Three, I think.
I think I'm a three.
It's a good one.
That's the one we're in right now.
That is a good season.
Yeah.
That might be the best season.
My kids are like... Did you go to the mall?
Like, really?
Yes.
You guys have never been to the mall?
No, like, I remember, like, hearing growing up, like, you know, the older kids say, like, oh, yeah, we go to the mall after school and we hang out. Like, that has never been a thing for my generation.
I didn't go to the mall after school to hang out because we would go to St. Clair Square in Fairview. If it was the weekend and I could drive, I would go to the Galleria if I could. But we'd absolutely go and just casually... You shopped, but you didn't really have much money.
Right.
But you would go. I would go to the mall all the time. And my kids were asked, like, did you do that, Mom? And I'm like, yeah. Stop acting like I was with the dinosaurs.
It's just funny because there are still malls.
Yeah, you could. You too. I'm not taking you.
Wow. A roller derby?
It's just one of my favorite things. To discover a store that I used to shop in the mall, have a storefront in a strip mall, or I can just go park in front of it, walk in, buy my thing, and leave.
Going to like the St. Louis Mills back in the day, though, that was like an all day thing when you were little.
St.
Like,
Louis
oh
Mills.
My gosh, we'll watch the Blues practice and we'll go race at the NASCAR.
Going to the St. Louis Mills back in the day, it was St. Louis Mills was like actually after my mall time.
Yeah.
So that's like so new that. I didn't do it because it was too new for me. Jeez. Like it was past the it was past my mall time.
Is St. Louis Mills gone?
Yes,
completely.
Pretty is much. It completely yeah. okay? So yeah. It was kind of after everybody's mall time.
Isn't there still a Bass Pro?
There's something over there.
It's
still.
A Cabela's.
It's a Cabela's.
Is that what it is? Okay,
yeah. That was Bass Pro.
The mall was man. When you didn't have any money, it was like okay, you go into Spencer Gifts, you giggle a little bit, you walk out, you get your Auntie Anne's pretzel, you get some Dippin' Dots.
There
and you just hang
out.
There is
Spencer's Borrow. In Edwardsville. There's a storefront Spencer's in Edwardsville.
A standalone?
Really? Yes.
I did not know
and
this.
Every time we drive past it, my son, who's like pretty much 15, he's like, Spencer's.
he's right on the right track
he's
then.
Totally.
He's going to be fine.
He's got a buddy who I was, the Washington, D.C. trip that I went on, we did go through a mall there. This kid was literally sprinting through the mall. To find Spencer. I was like, why is he running? And Charlie was, he's trying to find Spencer's. And I'm like, let's go to a map and find it. And I told him, like, you have to stop running. People are going to think you're stealing things. And there was no Spencer's at the mall, which was good because I was going to not really allow them to go peruse the Spencer's.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons. But yes, in Edwardsville, you can just walk into Spencer's. It's right by Goodwill and Slackers.
Did your kids think that the National Mall was like an actual mall? At any point,
I actually just learned that it wasn't.
I was
13
Ethan?
When I went, and I remember being like, "This isn't a mall.
There's no Spencer Gifts in here.
Yeah.
America's a lie." You got another story before we wrap?
Yeah, one more, and I have to get this in because there's a new food combo taking TikTok by storm.
Oh Lord!
It is called gummy polar bears. They are gummy bears that you soak for hours and hours in Sprite, then stick them in the freezer for at least 3 hours, pull them out, and eat them. Not only are they bigger, but they're also chewier.
We gotta try it, don't
and
we?
They
it
taste like
delicious.
Sprite. So
and by
I think
we, I mean the show.
This
and
is
you.
Something that we will be doing probably today.
So if we start this during the show today, would you try them tomorrow? Is that
yeah? I think that's how it works.
Do we have Sprite.
You gotta let them sit and then freeze them.
Oh yeah.
I'll give you my card and you can go because they have you.
Yeah.
You
well,
probably,
I probably have some in my desk. So.
Yeah. Do you have Sprite?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Sprite and like Sierra Mist. What is it called now? Starry. I can't get behind that.
No.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Just be Sierra Mist and just let's be friends.
Does Sierra Mist exist?
No.
Is that the
Are we wrapping?
Gone.
Sierra Mist is a person. Yeah, we're wrapping.
Okay, good. Good to know. Oh, all right, we'll see you next hour.
Steve Moore, Representative Mary Miller next. Bye. Don't run.